Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast, which this week is a BAFTA special.
And the BAFTA is awarded to Roma.
So it's Monday morning, the morning after the BAFTAs, and I'm joined once again by Jack Howard.
Hello.
Welcome to the podcast. Last night you went to the BAFTAs and I stayed at home and watched them on television. I should say that I've done the BAFTAs.
Right, so you've been there, done that.
I've been there, done that.
Don't need to do it again.
I am three times your age. I did present a BAFTA once. Many years ago, I presented the BAFTA for Best Foreign Language Film. I did the most brilliant speech. It was hilarious. I did this whole thing about international language of film, which is so fabulous because it means that through the miracle of subtitles, we can understand all these different things. But Americans will still feel the need to remake. But Hollywood will still feel the need to remake them in American. Big laugh, you know, blah 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 blah. Unfortunately, when I rang my family to say how was I, they went, "You weren't in it," and that was the year that they didn't broadcast the Best Foreign.
Oh.
I was in the also in tonight's ceremony.
Yeah.
A shot of me going, "The girl with the dragon tattoo." That was it. Nothing else. So I watched it on television, so I understood that I will have missed some things.
Yes.
Perhaps even the best things. Firstly, how was it for you?
It was great. Like, it's, I'm still got this sort of like childlike wonder about the whole thing.
So you are still a child.
Oh, sure. I'm just sat there spotting people going, "Oh, there's Mahershala Ali. Oh, that Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali having a little conversation. Oh, no, Bradley Cooper's joined in." Like, it's just me just sort of like looking over a balcony and going, "Oh, I want to be down there with you lot." But the awards themselves were...
Hang on, before you... It was the Royal Albert Hall, right?
It was
the
Royal Albert Hall. Yeah.
And you had a good seat.
And I had a great seat because I was lucky enough to go a couple of years ago and I was sitting up in the nosebleeds.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I don't care, I'm going. I don't care where I'm sitting. But I had I was in like the grand tier, I think it's called.
The grand tier.
Yeah, so only like one floor up. So good view of all of it. I got a good view for all of Joanna Lumley's badly delivered and written humour.
How was that in the... Because I have to say, watching it at home, I thought one of two things. I thought either the audience aren't laughing or the audience microphone isn't turned on. And I confess that... I mean, last year, I thought that Joanna Lumley was rather let down by her scriptwriters. I didn't think it was her fault. I mean, she's a...
Yeah, she's fantastic.
But in the very first, the opening monologue, which is actually the thing which always sets out the table, which is the stuff that Stephen Fry always did so well. You know, he would be witty and erudite and rude, but he'd get away with it. Joanna Lumley was telling these punning jokes. And one of them was, she said, "Steve Coogan is here. He helped me in the dressing room earlier on, because he's there for a stand on." He said, "And as I said, here's another fine dress you got me into." And they cut to Steve Coogan literally going... And then she did the and Spike Lee, whose film Black Klansman is brilliant, although I'm surprised it went down so well at the Klan Film Festival. And at that point, I nearly turned the television off because I thought, this isn't fair. Didn't somebody go, "You know, we're not going to do that because it's not funny"?
I can just imagine, just like this off, like Mike. Me, just from miles away, going, "Stop it! Stop doing that!"
To the Rising Star Award.
And I wouldn't be forgiven if I didn't mention Richard E. Grant. Where
a performance. Honestly, an actor can wait decades for a role like that. Just slightly less time than you had to wait for a reply from Barbara Streisand, wasn't it, darling? What was that, 44 years? You know. But it's lovely to see Babs getting round to doing her correspondence. Well done, sweetheart. Makes me feel like a saint, actually.
Okay, so let's go through the awards. Let's start with the EE Rising Star. This is the one that is voted for by the public. That went to Letitia Wright, who seemed to be a very, very popular win.
Yes. I've been quite good at predicting this award for the last few years, and this time I was like, I think it could go to any one of them. Like, it did, because usually this is almost like a popularity contest. It's like, yeah, who's the most popular so far?
Which was demonstrated by the year that Shia LaBeouf won.
Right.
And you go, he's like literally in some of the biggest films of the year. It's not like he's a rising star, he's like, yeah, he's risen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. When Tom Holland won, I was like, yeah, he's Spider-Man. He's fine. Yeah, but these ones, like, these were all fantastic.
Barry Keoghan, Cynthia Erivo, Jesse Buckley, who I think is brilliant, Lakeith Stanfield, and Letitia Wright. I would have been happy with any of them.
Yeah.
But Letitia Wright gave a lovely speech.
Yeah, she likes God.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, she's a big
she
fan.
She thanked God, personally.
A lot. Yeah, I did like that she took the time to mention mental health awareness and things like that. I thought that was a really good platform to do it on.
Really great that it started off with somebody saying, if you're struggling and if you have moments of insecurity and all the rest of it, yes, I went through all of that. Right at the very beginning of the ceremony, I thought that struck a nice note.
Yeah, and I think that, like, the example of someone standing there with a BAFTA and saying, I was going to quit acting.
Yeah.
And sort of now here, yeah, I am. I think, great. I love that award. I love that it exists. And I do like that it's voted for by the public as well.
Yeah. And she comes out of the Identity Acting School, which, of course, John Boyega is the patron of.
Right.
And so, yeah, so I thought that was a deserved win. Special visual effects, Black Panther.
Which I think is weird. I think,
really, why?
Yeah, because I thought some of the visual effects in Black Panther felt a little bit off sometimes, whereas, really? I thought Infinity War was mostly pretty great. But I thought, like, for example, the CGI fest that's in the third act of Black Panther felt like it was out of, like, early 2000s X-Men sometimes, where the camera was moving with the characters, and just felt a little bit weird to me. But I suppose, like, it's just another it's going to the same company, so who cares? Like, yeah, it's probably the same team that would have got up and collected the award. But yeah, personally, I think that, like, yeah, it should have been Avengers.
The only thing I'd say about that is, I think if you look at something, I mean, Ready Player One, the clip they played from Ready Player One was
a mess.
Was exactly what you're talking about. First Man kind of gets a little bit overlooked because it looks so physical. It doesn't look like special visual.
Because they built a huge screen for it, didn't they? I also think that, like, it's not nominated, but I thought that Mission Impossible Fallout as well, like, doesn't have that many visual effects, but where it uses them is really, really, like, impressive. Like,
the whole thing about Mission Impossible Fallout is, this really is Tom Cruise really doing stuff. This stuff.
So I bet they don't want visual effects in there. They don't want people to think it's not real.
Yeah. Okay, so on to sound. Bohemian Rhapsody,
which is weird, but that's weird. Like, A Quiet Place the sound is so integral to the story there, and I think it's so strange that, I mean it's obviously that it's the British awards, so they're gonna give it to something like Bohemian Rhapsody, and they wanted to honour it somewhere.
You think it's the BAFTAs, they're British, it's a British film?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that in that one I would have given it to any of the other ones over Bohemian Rhapsody. I think that A Quiet Place especially, and I also I'm gutted that You Were Never Really Here isn't on there, because I thought that you sound so brilliantly.
But You Were Never Really Here was kind of been overlooked
completely
everywhere.
Yeah, I was so happy to see it was nominated for Best British Film.
Yeah,
that's, just even see it up there, I was like, yes.
But it's such a weird thing, because You Were Never Really Here now opened in Cannes, you know, nearly 2 years
back,
and that was when
it won Best Film, didn't it?
No, she won Best Best Writing, and she won Best Actor,
right?
So, you know, a win for Lynn Ramsey and a win for Joaquin Phoenix. But by the time it then opened and came into awards contention, it was kind of next year. People had sort of forgotten.
It was about now last year that it came out, then I saw it.
Yeah. But it's, you know, I think it's because I think that film is brilliant. I think it's a real shame that it was overlooked. The only thing I'd say about sound is, again, I think the sound in First Man is really, really important.
Yeah.
And Bohemian Rhapsody, I think, wins.
It's very showy.
Yeah, it's showy, and because it's a musical.
And they've managed to, like, mix all of Freddie's voices with, like, an impersonator. And, exactly, you know, it is impressive, obviously.
Yeah, makeup and hair. We have Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favourite, Mary Quinn Scott, Stan and Ollie, and Vice. I went to The Favourite.
so strange. I thought that the Vice was like a shoe-in for that, but
because
I suppose
there is more makeup and hair in Vice than there is in almost any film. It's like, literally, is that Christian Bale or is that makeup and hair?
Yeah. And best actor goes to makeup and hair.
I mean, I have reservations about Vice, but I did think that the makeup and hair in Vice was done pretty well.
But this is the start of the favourite taking over.
Okay, so then on to costume design. The lovely thing about this category was that when they opened the envelope, they announced Sandy Powell, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the camera cut to Sandy Powell, who was literally going,
for which one?
Which one? It wasn't until they went, oh yes, it's for The Favourite, because she was also up for Mary Poppins Returns. I mean, Sandy Powell, you know, a legend in the world. And again, I think a very, very deserving win, but it was a great moment. Sandy Powell for, yeah, which? Oh, for that one.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm glad the other one.
I'm really, really glad that The Favourite is winning stuff like this as well, because I think that part of why the film works so well and it's so simple as a film, but also so odd and weird, yeah, is because people in these departments were allowed to play around as much as they were.
Yeah.
Like the joke about you look like a badger wouldn't have been as funny without that makeup and hair, like being able to play with her the way that they did. And that's what makes it so special, I think.
Ballad of Buster Scruggs in there as well. So
really happy just to see that nominated, and as well for the Oscars as well. Like, like when it came up for, I think it's up for Best Adapted Screenplay. I'm just really, really happy to see that little movie that came out of nowhere.
And another Netflix movie. And
yes.
Another thing which obviously is a big thing with this year is Netflix winning big. And after the whole thing that happened with the Cannes Film Festival saying, you know, we're not going to accept Netflix movies for competition. And then suddenly Venice, suddenly Roma. So this there has now been a sea change from now on. There isn't going to be any argument about whether or not Netflix movies are proper movies.
Netflix knows what they're doing as well. Because I think Amazon almost had like sort of the market on that. They were sort of had things like Manchester by the Sea The Big Sick. And now Netflix seems to have gone, okay, we're gonna play at this. We want some awards in our cases and our offices, and I think that they're doing such a brilliant job with it.
And we'll talk about this when we get to Best Film. Alfonso Cuarón was very definitely saying, as far as he's concerned, Roma is a cinema film. What was your favourite section in Buster Scruggs? Because my favourite section in Buster Scruggs was Tom Waits.
Me too. Yeah, the gold. Yeah.
That
brilliant.
Was one of the best things I saw last year. It was absolutely wonderful.
Fantastic. And I also thought about that particular section was that it was perfectly placed within the movie as well, because you'd started to learn almost like the format of what the shorts were about. So you were like, where's the tragedy? When's it going to come about? And then when it does, and then it doesn't, I thought that was like a really nice little twist on the sort of the format of it. Yeah.
Okay, on to production design. I should say that on Saturday night, I was hosting the British Film Production Guild Awards. Production design is always one of the ones that the general public audiences go, I'm not entirely sure what it is. The nominees were Fantastic Beasts, The Favourite, First Man, Mary Poppins and Roma. Again, a win for The Favourite.
Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah, I'm just happy to see it winning.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that they shot it in a real palace and the stuff that they did to that place to make it look so unique, unlike any other period piece I've ever seen. Yeah, it definitely deserves that.
The weird thing about production design is, and critics are actually particularly poor at this, critics talk about directors and they talk about cinematographers and they talk about them, but they don't talk about production design. And I think generally because we're not entirely sure what production design and art direction is. If we're talking about stuff that's in the frame, we mean cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think this was brought up Production Guild Awards to raise awareness of what production design is, I think, quite a big thing, and to claim ownership and authorship of a film from a production design point of view. Okay, on to editing. Again, it's one of those very difficult categories because most editors will tell you, obviously, the Fellowship Award went to Thelma Schoonmaker, who is this legendary editor, but every editor will tell you that the the best editing is the editing you don't notice.
Yes.
And if a film is brilliantly edited, you don't say it was brilliantly edited.
That's entirely true. But I also think that sometimes you can notice. And obviously, I'm a filmmaker as well, so yeah. I can sort of go, oh, that was particularly, like, you know, I can sort of see into it sometimes and I can't help it.
Yeah.
And I thought... I was so happy that Vice won. I was a big fan of that movie. I know you had your problems with it.
Yeah.
But I thought that the way it was cut together was so wholly unique. It sort of reminded me, actually, of the way that The Departed was edited. Because The Departed had some really weird cuts and transitions and like ways of moving the story along. And I thought that Vice did a similar thing with all of its weird freeze framing. And it almost felt like it was edited by somebody who... is used to editing things on the internet. It felt very modern and sort of experimental, and that's why I thought it was very deserving of that.
Okay, well, I will defer to you on that, because that is an area that you know more about than I do. You are a filmmaker and you have made stuff for the internet and for television, so you know, that's kind of your area. Cinematography. Now, this was interesting because cinematography was Bohemian Rhapsody, Cold War, The Favourite, First Man, and then Roma. The point with Roma is that Roma was shot by Alfonso Cuarón, the director, who then from the stage thanked Chivo, the brilliant cinematographer who he's always worked before, Emmanuel Lubezki. And it was interesting to see a director win the award for cinematography, wasn't it?
Yes, it was very interesting. And I think the plan was not for him to shoot it himself. He wanted Lubezki, Chivo, and he wasn't available. And then he got somebody else, apparently. I think this is the case. And then he wasn't happy with him. So now he's like credited as an operator or something like that. And Cuarón took over as DOP.
Okay.
So yeah, I think it's very, very interesting to see him win. And he probably will again for the Oscars win both cinematography and director. I don't know if that's ever happened before.
Okay, but here's the interesting thing. That what's significant about this is with Phantom Thread, which Paul Thomas Anderson shot himself, there is no credit for cinematographer.
Correct, yes.
So, and I'm actually, I think that was one that was beautifully shot, but Paul Thomas Anderson said, I'm not a cinematographer.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I thought that when Alfonso Cuarón did his acceptance speech, he was kind of almost saying, I'm not really a cinematographer. I actually want this award to be shared with the person from whom I took all my advice.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, BAFTA, for this honor. It's very well known that Ernest Lubitsch in his office had a sign frame that said, what would Lubitsch do? Billy Wilder had that about Lubitsch. And for me, all the time was, what would Chivo do? So I want to share this with Emmanuel Lubezki. Thank you very much.
I thought it was very nicely judged that he wasn't saying he was a cinematographer, and I think that's what Paul Thomas Anderson was doing when, again, he wanted to work with his regular cinematographer, couldn't do it, ended up with a crew of them, because if you've ever seen a camera being used, it's not
what yes. an operator. Yeah.
So it's which of course you have done. Okay, on to original music. Right.
This is a bit strange, I think, this one.
Lead us through the nominations.
Black Klansman, If Beale Street Could Talk, Isle of Dogs, Mary Poppins Returns, and A Star Is Born, which took home the BAFTA.
Can I just say that the winner here should have been Nicholas Britell?
But it should have been If Beale Street Could Talk.
Yeah, it's just, sorry.
Yeah. No.
I mean, I love A Star Is Born.
Yes, so do I. And I get that as well, that the music in this is like, again, showy in the way that it's very integral to the way that the story moves across.
It's about songs.
But If Beale Street Could Talk wouldn't be the same movie if it didn't have that score on it.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's beautiful. Like, it might be one of the most beautiful scores I've heard in years. Like, yeah. It's just mind-blowing how good it is. And to have it be snubbed by something a bit more showy is almost a little bit like a kick in the teeth. And it's like,
But also, I think Beale Street has been generally overlooked.
Yes, it has.
The nominations. I know I saw a tweet that you'd seen, because you, since the last time I saw you, hadn't seen. You have now seen.
Yes, I have.
You loved it, right?
Yes, it's wonderful. Yeah. I think that it basically achieves everything it intends to achieve, and that's maybe the highest thing I could ever say about a film.
Yeah.
Like, there may be reservations I have personally, but in terms of what it wanted to do,
yeah,
I think it did all of them brilliantly.
Barry Jenkins said a brilliant thing about Nicholas Britell's score. There was a program with Miranda Sawyer when she was talking about the score, a very good program. And he said this thing. He said, this sounds like a criticism, but it isn't. He said, the film could exist without Nicholas Britell's score, but Nicholas Britell's score could not exist without the film. And he meant it as a compliment, because what he meant is, the score is absolutely accompanying the yes. film. It is doing the thing that a score is meant to do. And I'm just, in the very near future, starting a soundtracks program on a radio, on Scala Radio. And one of the first things I was thinking about was, are there excerpts that you can play from scores that work with the film but sound completely different when away from it? And I think that's what Barry Jenkins was saying. He's saying it wasn't a flaw, he's saying it was an absolute compliment. Like, for me, that score is so integral to the film.
I completely agree. Like, it's just, it sounds like the characters to me, and when I hear it, it looks like the images that I saw.
Yeah,
I can't imagine anything else. And just a little side note: a friend of mine went to Q&A with Barry Jenkins after seeing a screening of the film, and something that really stuck with her that she shared with me and that immediately impacted me that I'll share with all of you now.
Can I say, please never use the phrase "impacted me" ever again if we're going to be friends, because it's a terrible phrase. It's not
a verb. I'll try and
stop. Okay,
I'll try and dispose of
also,
that.
Also, don't ever reach out. Okay,
I might shout at you next time.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Okay. Something which had an impact on you.
Yes. So Barry Jenkins said that in the film, when he says, "I'm going to build us a table,"
yeah.
and at the end, they have a table. It's not the table that he wanted, but it's the table they have. And I was like, "Whoa!" Right in the heart. Yeah. Wow. Like, what? I didn't even think about it. And as soon as it said, you're like, "That's so obvious. Of course, it's that." And I just thought that was beautiful, actually. Yeah, just really, really beautiful.
I loved it. I just thought it was wonderful. On supporting actor, okay, so the two clear standouts here. So Mahershala Ali, who is, favourite across the
yes.
board,
and will win everything, yeah.
And is terrific in Green Book. I mean, there is the question in Green Book of whether he actually is a supporting actor.
Because, yeah, he's not. No, the same way that Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz aren't supporting actors in The Favourite, but it's political,
but
isn't it?
More so, I think, in the case of this, because in terms of him and Viggo Mortensen, the reason that Viggo Mortensen is up for lead actor is because, obviously, from the film company's point of view, they don't want two people competing for the same award. But the fact is that Viggo Mortensen is only lead actor because the narrative is nominally seen through his character's point of view.
Yeah.
But there's no question.
While he learns not to be racist anymore.
Right, yes, but there is no question that Mahershala Ali is a leading role in that. I do think there was a lot of it. So the other nominees, Adam Driver for BlacKkKlansman, Sam Rockwell for Vice, Timothée Chalamet for Beautiful Boy, and Richard E. Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me? And I called this wrong. I thought that I have no doubt that Mahershala Ali will win Supporting Actor at the Oscars, dead cert.
Without a doubt.
But I did think that Richard E. Grant had a chance at the BAFTAs.
That's so interesting, and I think that it's because it's English again.
Yes, that is because British,
I'll be honest, I don't get what all the fuss is about with this role.
With
Richard E. Grant.
Oh, okay.
I don't get what all the fuss is about. So I heard that he was getting nominated across the board, and he was delighted with it. And I love seeing what he's doing on social media. Like, from when he got the role in Star Wars to now when he's getting nominated for every award, the videos he makes are just the most charming things I've ever seen, and I'm so excited for him. And the fact that he's got all this boyish excitement in him still, that he's a 60s, yeah, and he's a 60 something year old man, I think. But I watched this film and I kind of liked it. I thought it was fine. I thought the performances raised it, but ultimately I thought that, this might diminish what he did, but I thought he was sort of just playing flamboyant gay man, and that was kind of all he was doing.
I was about to slap you. I thought you were about to say he was playing Withnell.
Right, no.
Fine, okay. Because the criticism, you're wrong, it's only. The criticism that's been levelled about this is it's him playing Withnell so many years later, and it's not. It is, in many ways, it's the polar opposite of Withnell.
Right.
The whole thing with Withnell is he's somebody who wants to be an actor but can't be an actor, and is completely full of self-confidence and in your face and completely emotionally open in a way which is terrible and raw. In this film, he's playing somebody who is performing.
Yes, constantly.
He's
putting
on a front of being, everything's fabulous, when actually you know that it isn't fabulous, that everything's falling apart underneath. So, and they were different. I did think Richard Gordon
was doing this. And I think I know what you're saying, and he is putting on a performance, but I think that's my ultimate problem with Can You Ever Forgive Me, is that I think that whenever it wants to lean into something that maybe is, all is lost or something bad is happening to the characters, it doesn't ever lean far enough.
Okay.
Like, even the best sequence in the whole film, which is her stealing the documents,
yeah.
and when she leaves, the tension there, they don't hold on it long enough for my taste. It just sort of lets you leave that situation with too much pace. And I was like, no, let me stay there. Let me feel how horrible this felt when she was doing it. Okay. And the same with when Richard E. Grant is revealed to have more struggles. Yeah. It doesn't feel like it properly leans into them enough.
Okay, but I disagree because I think that I think the idea of having two fundamentally unlikable characters spending mm-hmm. a lot of time together not liking each other is, I mean, it's kind of like, it's like Midnight Run. It's, you know, this shouldn't work, but it really does. And actually, I thought that the two things I really liked about Can You Forgive Me, firstly, you know, it is Nicole Holofcener's script, and she was originally going to direct it. I think Mario Hello has done a brilliant job of directing it, but I like the script, and it feels very Nora Ephron to me, and I'm a huge Nora Ephron fan. And secondly, I like the fact that it doesn't take the rough edges off the characters, that they are every bit as, you know, when her agent says to Elizabeth McCarthy's character, based on a true story, she said, you know, you can behave like that when you're famous, but when you're not famous, you cannot be such a bitch. And I thought that was really done.
Yeah, well. I think there are some good moments in it. And like I said, I did mostly like it. I think that in terms of just what it's about, I'm sort of bored of seeing writers who can't write and having conversations with agents and them saying, like, no one wants to buy anything from you, and her going, why? And
didn't you like the central irony that it's a story about somebody finding their voice by imitating the voices of other people?
Yeah, I love that. But I feel like, just because that idea and theme is there doesn't mean that the way it's executed necessarily work for me.
So Mahershala Ali for supporting actor.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Although, to be honest, I would have given it to Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yes.
And love Beautiful Boy, right?
So I didn't love it, but I thought it was painful and brilliant in all the right ways.
Yeah.
I don't think it's one of those ones that I'd want to watch again, but just in terms of just the way that the story moves along, I think that you're used to, you know, somebody struggling and then coming out of it, yeah, and then that being the story, whereas this was a constant battle with that format. And I thought that was like really hard to almost watch, because you're hoping for, was it to get better?
Yeah.
And I thought it was really brave of the film to keep that cycle going, because that's what addiction is like. And I thought that Timothy Chalamet disappeared into that. The scene that they keep showing, the one of him in the diner,
yeah,
where he's saying, like, I was your special little thing, and now you don't like who I am anymore. Like, when he's doing that, there's no irony, there's nothing in his eyes. Like, he just is in that moment, and I don't feel like he's read that in a script.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, with Mahershala Ali, he's brilliant, and he's so watchable, but I feel like, you know, it's the tone of the film as well, but I can almost see Mahershala Ali doing a performance in a way, not in a sort of I don't want to diminish what he does, but like, I thought that Timothy Chalamet was just outstanding for what he did in that film.
I think it's a very good role. I mean, the film did get to me, and it did feel painful, it did make me cry. I am also very aware of the things that are wrong with it. I mean, when I was a teenager, I remember seeing Christiana F, which was a film that felt like it was directed at teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels much more like it's a film, although it's based on the memoirs of both the father and the son, it felt much more like it was directed on.
Yeah.
It's a film which begins with somebody in an office saying, my son is a drug addict, can you tell me about drugs?
Yeah.
And also, which has been pointed out by my colleague Simran Hans, actually features a moment in which he goes into the kid's bedroom and finds a notebook which says, I am a drug addict.
Yes.
And this is why, which was like, you know.
And the music as well in that movie is so overwrought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, insane, the choices sometimes.
Yeah, but
at other times, like the scene with Nirvana, where they're singing along to it,
yeah,
and then it just it cuts to the reality of the present, and the music's still playing. It goes from being this really fun father and son, yeah, moment to being completely horrific, and the music works for both moments. So that really works.
Okay,
but then there's scenes with opera that are a bit too much.
They just felt an awful lot of time that the soundtrack was hitting me over the head, saying, now feel bad now. Okay, supporting actress, Amy Adams, Claire Foy, Emma Stone, Margot Robbie, and Rachel Weisz, who of course won. Surprise there?
No, because I think at the Oscars, Regina King is almost like locked in to win it.
Yeah.
Whereas here, she's not nominated at all.
No, which I have to say is a huge oversight, because I mean, I think these are great films. I think Rachel Weisz is brilliant in The Favourite, but if Regina King was in that particular category, it would be Regina King. Because
right.
She's
yep.
just brilliant.
I'm so happy to see Rachel Weisz take that home.
Yeah.
I thought that she was fantastic. Just brilliant. Well, very well deserved. Everyone in The Favourite is obviously just as good as the last one. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
Claire Foy is brilliant in First Man. That's a very, very difficult role. The Emma Stone, I mean, I thought it was great that when Olivia Colman said, we're all leading.
Yes.
Which I think was it. But I do think Regina King is a notable omission from that category. And she,
totally.
She will win the Oscar, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm pretty certain.
Yeah. Okay. On to leading actor. So Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born, Christian Bale for Vice, Steve Coogan for Stan and Ollie, Viggo Mortensen for Green Book, which we talked about before, and the winner is... Now, you and I did one of these podcasts about Bohemian Rhapsody, and you said, you know, the thing is, if there was any justice in the world, Rami Malek would not only be nominated for Best Actor, but would win. And we both laughed, because evidently there was no way in hell that was going to happen. Here it is.
Here it is, yeah, and he is... I think, again, a lock for the Oscar now for Best Actor. I think he's absolutely got it. I think Christian Bale was... He won the Golden Globe, and I think that everywhere else, pretty much Rami Malek has taken it.
Who won the... Is there only one Golden Globe for Best Actor?
No, so Rami Malek won for drama.
For drama.
And Christian Bale for
musical or comedy,
like, yeah.
Golden Globe's getting everything the wrong way around.
Yeah, yeah.
Again.
And, yeah, I think that Christian Bale was almost like competing neck and neck, and then he's almost fell away in the race, and Rami Malek is now just far away.
So you think he will win the Oscar?
I think it's almost 100% guaranteed.
And how do you now feel about the fact that you said... Because when you said it...
It almost felt a bit funny, yeah.
Well, it's good because the film had opened to terrible reviews and decent box office, and we were talking about it saying, you know... All these reviews, we actually like things.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I said on the podcast as well, but, you know, a big statement, and it's very my generation as well, but I think that Rami Malek is the best performance I've seen on screen in 10 years, probably since Heath Ledger's Joker. I think that just watching the screen...
Heath Ledger did win posthumously Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, and I think that it's the role... within the last 10 years that I have not seen the actor where, like, when he's on screen, I'm like, there's Freddie Mercury. And I think Christian Bale is fantastic in it, and what he did was great.
Yeah.
But sometimes he felt a bit Bruce Wayne Batman, but in a fat suit. And not, again, not to diminish what he did, because he's incredible.
I'm sort of talking like this.
And it's great, and he's doing some brilliant work.
Okay, the thing that Christian Bale is doing is the irrelevant pause that tells you that simple. I just... think that maybe if I were to
get a sandwich,
there are huge. This must be really good acting because there are huge pauses that I could drive.
And he's sort of talking out of one side of his mouth as well. Rami Malek, I thought,
he's brilliant.
An American doing an English accent as well, and with Emma Stone as well, she's doing a brilliant job. But sometimes you can, there it is. There's this sort of American doing an English accent sometimes, only very slightly. But with Rami Malek, I'm like, oh, that's just Freddie Mercury.
Well, you were at the show that I do at the BFI when Rami Malek did the thing about talking through the accent, about how, you know, it's inflected by his part, you know, all the different elements, and he was it was like a real masterclass in somebody putting together a voice, wasn't it? It was
completely
extraordinary,
and just around mannerisms and everything, just the way he sort of with the fake teeth bit his own lip and things like that, just all, and the way that his top lip would hide his teeth because he was embarrassed of them, like all those mannerisms were just there, and it doesn't feel like impersonation either.
Yes, give it more rock and roll.
I'm always up for that, Fred.
Put your body into it.
Right, okay. Put my body into it. I got it.
Not like that.
No, I got it. A bit more soul.
A bit more heart.
I'll do that. We good to go, Roy? You good?
Oh, and then there's the operatic section. You're going to love it.
The operatic section.
I know.
It sounds crazy,
I love it, Fred.
It could be a flop. It could work.
I love it.
What have we got to lose?
Nothing.
If you say so.
Okay, let's go.
So we must also address the fact that the elephant in the room was Bryan Singer's name was taken off the nomination. Yep. Dexter Fletcher was thanked.
I cheered. Yeah. Like in the room when he mentioned Dexter Fletcher, because he's been almost, again, sort of hidden.
Well, it's weird because everybody knows that Bryan Singer was fired. Dexter Fletcher took over. Dexter Fletcher actually was one of the people who was originally in the frame for it, and now he's done Rocketman. And he was the person who was brought in to finish the film, and but he didn't... I don't know the thing about credit, whether he didn't want credit.
He's got a credit for executive producer.
Yes, fine, but the film is solely credited in direction to Bryan Singer. And so not only is nobody even saying Bryan Singer's name anymore, they're actively thanking Dexter Fletcher because it seems to be now kind of generally Dexter Fletcher is the person who... pull this all together.
I wouldn't be surprised, it's probably illegal, but I wouldn't be surprised if on the DVD release Bryan Singer's name was gone. Do you know what I mean? Like the credits just don't...
Do you think that could happen?
I don't know.
The credits are contractual.
Incidentally as well, I think that Rami Malek winning Best Actor, I also think that really in terms of what I think the awards should be celebrating, that is the only award Bohemian Rhapsody should be up for, in my opinion. I don't think it deserves anything else in terms of, like, you know, praise in film and that achievement in film. I think that that is the most deserving one of the year, and I think it is the only one that, that Bohemian Rhapsody actually deserves in terms of nominations and awards. Without a doubt. I think it almost feels like Eddie Redmayne being like that, because I know that Rami Malek is not that new kid, but he, in the film world, is now just becoming a household name.
Yeah.
And it almost feels like, there you go, have an Oscar, now go and do what you want.
I'm not as certain as you are that it's locked, because I think that the damage of the Bryan Singer revelations, which are so appalling, may still
affect his...
I think they may still, I don't know.
And also America, obviously, like, I'm way more emotionally invested in the story of Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
So who knows? Like, that it could go that way, but I'm feeling pretty certain that it will go to Rami Malek. But there's always some surprises.
I think he should, because I think his performance is terrific. I mean, I agree. We all have reservations about the film, and I did think it was quite astonishing when it won, the awards that it did at the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
Outside of it,
I couldn't believe it.
Because even as somebody who likes the film, there are things that are evidently wrong with it.
Totally. Yeah. When it won Best Drama, I was like, no, what's happening to the world?
Okay, so moving on, adapted screenplay. So this was a very popular win in the room for Spike Lee for Black Klansman.
And I think he's got the Oscar as well. Yeah, I think this is one that, like, they want to honour Spike Lee. I think that it's a good screenplay. I would personally, again, give it to Beale Street. I think Beale Street's screenplay is superb.
Yeah.
But yeah, Spike Lee, I think it's almost like his time to win stuff as well, because he's been this independent filmmaker that everyone knows, but no one's really celebrated enough, and now...
He's been at the Oscars before, but I mean, I think in the case of this, I mean, I did think when I was, before the Oscar nominations were announced, doing kind of those absurd predictions, that Spike Lee had a very good shot at Best Director.
Right.
You know, I thought this was actually the moment. I thought this was going to be his moment as Best Director to win. You know, because I think probably that's now gone away, because I do think it'll probably be Alfonso Cuarón.
Yes.
But we'll get to that moment. But I do think it was a very, very welcome win. I do think that film's written brilliantly. Great that he was as upfront about Jordan Peele's role
and gave me the six-word pitch,
which I thought was just fantastic.
Yeah, and it is. It's an amazing pitch. Black man infiltrates the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah,
I want to see that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and there was an interview afterwards where somebody said, you know, if you win at the Oscars, will you get political? And he said, does the sun rise? Is the moon in the sky? And then he went, is Prince purple? Is James Brown? Is Barry White? He's clearly been preparing all that.
I was lucky enough to sort of see him at the after party thing last night, and I just shook his hand and told him his film was fucking awesome. And he was like, thanks, man. And then just kept going.
I did it on stage with him and John David Washington, who I think is brilliant.
Yes, he is.
Really, really great. And again, somebody, I think with awards-worthy stuff. And he was very good, because he was combative, as he always is, but he thinks everything through. There's no question that you can throw at him that he hasn't thought through and that he hasn't figured out tonally about the film, because it's really difficult taking that film and doing it with a kind of anarchic comedic tone, which then turns to horror absolutely on a knife edge. And the other thing I realised by this, I was doing this on stage with these two, so, you know, great filmmakers, and on one side was Spike Lee, and he was wearing this, you know, this kind of Spike Lee outfit, and on his feet he had a set of these really rare Prince trainers that looked like they were worth like $1 million. And to the other side was John David Washington, who had this fantastic pair, because he was an athlete, and he had this fantastic pair of trainers, all this thing, and I looked down at my feet. I this is true, I was wearing Minion socks. It was a Q&A, but I was literally wearing Minion socks. You could not have looked more like, who is the old white person sitting between them?
But at the same time, like, if Spike Lee were wearing Minion socks, he'd make it work.
Yeah, can I just say that that wouldn't happen?
Okay. I tell you something as well, at the BAFTAs,
he brought up my socks.
Well, I don't think this was in shot, but when Rami Malek won Best Actor, Spike Lee leapt into the air.
Because they worked together before. And yes, no, absolutely, that was in shot. That was on the television. It was a great moment. He leapt in the air and they hugged each other.
Yeah,
that was great. Moving on to best original screenplay. It was Cold War, Green Book, Roma, and Vice, and the winner went to The Favourite.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Yeah, I've got nothing bad to say about
screenplays.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I haven't read it. I would love to read it. I just think that it's so incredibly like. Oh, just weird and funny and dark and incredibly personal at the same time.
I think the great thing about it is that it's a screenplay that Deborah Davis wrote some years ago.
Like 20 years ago,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That she wrote a version of it, and that was then taken on by Tony McNamara, who did all the rewrites, and I think changed it quite substantially. But what's wonderful seeing the two of them on stage together is that they are both clear that it's a collaboration. So she spoke first. She said, you know, my first BAFTA for my first screenplay.
Yeah.
And now my favourite writer, Tony McNamara, who was so... It's just brilliant to see, because often you hear about, you know, somebody wrote this and somebody rewrote this. There's kind of, you know, this fighting and squabbling. They really seem to be a perfect example of how two writers...
complement each other.
Yeah, but it's not that they were passing scripts between one person did this and then another person did this and then at the end of it... It's a combined effort, which I thought was really terrific.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of the credit for The Favourite will go to Yorgos Lanthimos because it's so incredibly stylish in his way. But that screenplay, I think, is better than any of the other screenplays that he has adapted previously.
It's a great bit of writing. It's a really, really, it's a terrific piece of writing. Okay, on to animated film. I know that you were punching the air for this.
So it was
Incredibles 2, Isle of Dogs, and the winner was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
So incredibly happy for that. I was wearing Spider-Man cufflinks to support my best friends, Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
So I wear Minion socks and you wear Spider-Man cufflinks.
Yeah. And incidentally, Chris Miller was also wearing his...
Minion socks. Very good, yes.
No one else has Minion socks, Mark. He was wearing Spider-Man cufflinks as well. And we got a picture together with our Spider-Man, like holding him up. And he let me hold his BAFTA. I was like... This is. I don't want to give this back. This is a moment. And also, they're so deserving of it. They're some of the freshest voices in Hollywood. It was a shame that they got kicked off a Star Wars movie for being too fresh.
That's right. Stop coming up with new stuff. Just do the old thing.
Stop it. Yeah, and then, I mean, what a brilliant way, what a brilliant thing to do, to get fired from Star Wars and then go, all right, now we're going to do that. Mm-hmm. And it probably gave them more time to be able to really concentrate on it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm speculating, but like, what a brilliant thing. Like, at the start of the year, Solo comes out, in my opinion, one of the worst films of the year. And then towards the end of the year, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, one of the best films of the year, with the directors that got fired from that one.
Yeah. Well, look, from Solo to Solo. So in documentary, the winner in the documentary category was Free Solo. It was up against McQueen, RBG, They Shall Not Grow Old, and Three Identical Strangers. Now, that is a really, really tough category, don't you think?
Yeah, I haven't seen all of them, I'll admit, but Three Identical Strangers
is astonishing.
Yeah, and They Shall Not Grow Old
is
yeah.
one of my favourite films of the year. I thought that what people
that was just one of the most upsetting, like, visceral experiences I've ever had in the cinema. Like, Hazel struggled with it when we saw it together, but Three Identical Strangers plays out like a thriller. Like, I was watching it and being like, I want to see this, like, properly, like, fictionalized, but also, like, I can't believe that this isn't fiction.
Yeah.
This is incredible. And Free Solo, I haven't seen, but
I have seen Free Solo, and here's the thing with it. I mean, I'm frightened of heights, right? So seeing Free Solo for me was like, you know, because it's a film about obsession, and mm-hmm. it's a film about being driven to do this. This is free climbing up against, you know, sheer rock faces. And it's partly about that, and it's also partly about, you know, what would drive somebody to do that, and the kind of, you know, the what they're wrestling with in order to, you know, the climbing becomes almost more important than their human relationships. And it's very interesting on that. The footage of the climbing is just absolutely terrifying.
Right.
I mean, I am really scared of heights, so it was like watching it through my fingers going, this just crazy. Yeah.
Is that what you would have picked if you were going to pick one?
Personally, I would have gone for They Shall Not Grow Old because I was so invested in that. But I do think Free Solo is a very, very good. It is a terrific piece of work, and, you know, National Geographic being involved in it and everything. I think it's really good. And again, you know, another important female filmmaker win, which I think there was a lot of diversity in the wins from BAFTAs. The wind does appear to have changed, and that's very good.
And what about, did you manage to see Won't You Be My Neighbour, I think that's called?
Yeah, no, not yet.
About Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, no.
I adored it, yeah. And was shocked actually to see, especially that it wasn't nominated for an Oscar, because I thought it was just beautiful, just gorgeous, like just so lovely to watch, just so heartwarming. And I, you know, we in the UK don't know too much about Mr. Rogers, so it was nice to actually like see his story told, and also to like invest in it as much as I'm sure all the American audiences already have.
It's an invitation for somebody to be close to you. The greatest thing that we can do is to help somebody know that they're loved and capable of loving.
Won't you please won't you be my neighbor?
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, so on to film not in the English language. The contenders were Capernaum, Cold War, Dogman, Shoplifters, and the winner was Roma.
Obviously.
So
I saw Shoplifters. I thought that was brilliant.
It's fabulous.
Yeah, really, really good.
Capernaum is really, really terrific, and I have to say, I thought that had a shot. Cold War, I love. I absolutely love Cold War, and I thought that what was going to happen was that Cold War would win film not in the English language and Roma would win best film. I thought that's the way it would divide.
Right,
down.
Right.
When
incidentally, Roma wins everything.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Wins everything except for the ones that the favourite won. Right or wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to see something else get that at the Oscars if Roma is going to sweep the way it did here.
Yeah.
Just because, like, it doesn't need all of it, does it? Do you need that many?
Give some of them back.
Share.
Yeah. Okay, outstanding debut by a British writer-director. Now, I was really pleased by this, by a British writer-director or producer. The pictures in contention were Apostasy, which is terrific, A Cambodian Spring, which is really great, which I did an introduction for recently for the BFI player, Pilly, Ray and Liz, and the winner was Beast. And I thought Beast was brilliant. I think Jesse Buckley is terrific in it. Have you seen Beast? Okay, you need to see Beast because it is really, really good. It's a really, it's the kind of film that could only have been made here because obviously it's set on Jersey, but it's got a very kind of particular feel about it, and it's an intense psychological thriller with a kind of fairy tale element, and it's brilliantly handled by the cast. And I thought that was a very, very good win. I was very, very pleased.
Really like Johnny Flynn. So
yeah, he's great. Yeah. He's currently on stage in True West with Fit Kit Harington, right?
Right.
Yeah. Apparently getting great reviews. So, you know,
I think he's just been cast as David Bowie as well
in a
biopic of David Bowie called Starman.
Oh, okay. Directed by Dexter Fletcher.
Is it called Starman? I think it is. But Duncan Jones isn't very happy about it.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, there's no.
Well, he's not happy about the film itself.
About the film itself,
right?
Yeah, okay, and he's like, I don't know if they're going to be making this without any of my father's music, because I can tell you that no one owns the rights to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, I know that they always resist. I mean, Tom Haynes, of course, when he was making Velvet Goldmine. I mean, you know, despite the fact that that film is called Velvet Goldmine, Bowie isn't in it, mm-hmm. You know, in terms of the music stuff. Okay, so outstanding British film goes to Okay, and then on to outstanding British film. So, no surprise here. Beast was up for it, Bohemian Rhapsody, McQueen, Stan and Ollie. You were never really here. There's the moment at which
I'm so happy it was there.
But, of course, it went to
The favourites.
Which we're already starting to sound a little bit like The Favourite.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like, and Roma, and The Favourite. And but like, it's only because you get bored of saying it, but really, they are massively deserving of these roles.
Wouldn't it have been great if you were never really hearing one there?
Absolutely, yeah. If it did, I think I would have been on my feet for the rest of the award show. Yeah. Like, I love that film.
It's been overlooked. And
it's so overlooked.
It's outrageous.
And as well, I mean, two white men talking about this, but like, Lynn Ramsey has made a film that's, you know, for all intents and purposes, not specifically like, oh, a female orientated movie or whatever. She just made a film that she thought was an interesting movie, and she's not been nominated for Best Director or anything. I think she wrote You Were Never Really Here as well.
Yeah, she won the award at Cannes for the screenplay, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, like, why is Lynn Ramsey not getting nominated for, you know, my favourite film of last year, which is, and she directed and wrote it. Like, she's... her especially, I think, is what I'm mostly really annoyed about, is like when they're struggling, it seems, to find diversity in their nominations, there was the best one and you haven't honoured it in any way.
Well, in that case, let's go to the elephant in the room for the best director, the category, okay, which is Spike Lee for Black Klansman, Pavel Pavlikovsky for Cold War, Yorgos Lanthimos for The Favourite, Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born. All good contenders,
yep.
But an all-male list.
Yep.
Same as the Oscars. And this is in a year in which You Were Never Really Here was up for contention, in which Deborah Granik's Leave No Trace, which was my favourite film of the year, was up for it, in which Marielle Heller could have been nominated for Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Yeah.
You Don't Love, but it's up for several awards, in which Chloe Zhao was up for, could have been up for The Rider, in which we had, there was, you know, the whole argument is always, well, all the awards are doing is reflecting the state of the industry, which is that many more feature films are directed by men than are by women. But this was a year in which there was a whole swathe of really impressive awards contending stuff that was directed by, and in both the BAFTAs and the Oscars, all male lists.
And also, I don't like that, oh, we're just reflecting the industry. How about you set an example for what you want the future of the industry to be, rather than just like...
Well, how about you nominate Deborah Granik, who directed the best film of the year? I'm sorry, but there we go. Where is Leave No Trace in any of these nominations? That isn't a bit... You love Leave No Trace, right?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, Jack, you have to see
Leave
No Trace.
Okay, I will.
It's...
I just missed it when it was coming out. Well, yeah.
Here's the thing. Everybody missed it when it was coming out. It was a film that was... It did not get the attention it should have done. It was really weird. It played at a festival. It got brilliant reviews. People went, wow, this is so great. And then it didn't find an audience. But isn't it depressing that,
yep,
you know, of this year of all years, mm-hmm, to have an all-male list?
Completely, yeah. And what can you do other than just be a bit sad about it?
Yeah, exactly. A little bit like, well,
but... Alfonso Cuarón, very deserving win. Like, he I think that
more
this,
so than Spike Lee.
I think so. Yeah. Okay. So I liked Black Klansman, but wasn't blown away by it. Whereas I thought that Roma left me. I don't know how it left you, but like about half an hour afterwards, I was feeling or more. I probably just pulled myself out of it. But I was like emotionally just sort of like distraught after Roma. It was just so much to go through.
Okay. I think Roma is really good. I don't think it's my favourite film of the year.
It's not my favourite film of the year as well. I think it's an achievement.
Yes, I think it is an achievement. I think it is really good. But
I also respect that it's a massive passion project as well.
Yeah.
And I think the way he describes it is it's like it's about my childhood, but it's not from my point of view.
Yeah. Well, it's like Pavel Pavlikovsky's Cold War being inspired by his parents, but not being about his parents. It's a similar kind of, there's an autobiographical thread all the way through it. I do think, again, that the Roma thing, which is also important, is this is a Netflix movie, and look at all these kind of major awards that it's winning, which brings us to the big one, Best Film, Black Klansman, The Favourite, Green Book, A Star Is Born, and the winner is Roma. Although, actually, I think at the moment they said the winner is Roma, it could have gone either way, because I almost expected them to say The Favourite.
Yeah, which is interesting, because I actually thought, going into the BAFTAs, before they started announcing anything, I thought that Green Book was going to win Best Film here.
Oh.
Because it was starting to gear up into that direction, that Green Book was sort of sweeping a few things. And I thought that Green Book was going to be a surefire for the BAFTA, and that Roma was going to win the Best Picture at the Oscars.
Okay.
But they surprised they surprised us and went for Roma, and Roma, how many did it win overall? Because I know the favourite won seven
loads.
Awards.
It won, won
loads.
Did the favourite win the most awards?
Oh, did it?
This is always the statistics thing, because we're currently making a secret of cinema about awards ceremonies, and it's like astromaths after a while. because there are so many awards ceremonies now, and you literally just become dazzled by statistics. I think what we'll all take away from this is that the big winners were the favourite and Roma.
And the fact that Roma is as well won best film, best director, best cinematographer, and best foreign language film. Those are the massive ones.
Okay.
That as I think that's, and the fact that it took away all of those, and it's mostly for the same guy.
Yeah.
That is insane. And that's probably why he's sweeping as well, because everyone's going, wow, he did this, not on his own, but he definitely was driving it.
Right, Jack, we're going to do the thing nobody should ever do. We're going to go very quickly through the Oscars, and you and I choose what we think is going to win. So,
okay.
Best Picture, just for this, I'll do the contenders. Black Klansman, Black Panther, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favourite, Roma, Green Book, Star Is Born, and Vice.
Roma.
Yeah, Roma.
I think it's absolutely getting it.
Best Director, Alfonso Cuarón, Yorgos Lanthimos, Spike Lee, Adam McKay, Pavel Pavlikovsky.
Alfonso Cuarón.
You think?
Yeah, I think he's got it. Yeah. Okay. He's won before, hasn't he, for Gravity.
Yeah, I'm still going to hold out for Spike Lee, because I think there is a possibility.
I think that Spike Lee's going to win Best Original Screenplay.
All right, fine.
I think Cuarón's got that.
Okay, Best Actress, Jolita Laparizio, Glenn Close, Olivia Colman, Lady Gaga, and Melissa McCarthy.
Glenn Close.
Yes. That's the divide, isn't it? So it's Olivia Colman here, Glenn Close there, and her performance in The Wife. It's
and here's the thing as well, is I've got this like theory based on nothing that it's been 50 years since there's been a draw for Best Actress.
Oh, that's right. You think it's going to be a draw?
I've again, based on nothing, just because it's like, it sounds nice.
The last time was Barbara Streisand for Funny Girl.
Funny Girl, and it was Catherine Hepburn for The Lion of Winter.
Lion of Winter.
The winner, it's a tie. The winners are Catherine Hepburn in Lion in the Winter and Barbara Streisand.
And I think that it could do it again, just because it's been 50 years. That's the only thing that, like,
okay,
so it could be. And if it was going to split, I would think I would give it to Glenn Close and Olivia Colman.
Yeah.
I don't think Lady Gaga's got a chance anymore, because I think she's going to win.
No, I think that's,
she's going to win Best Original Song.
Yeah, I think that's
what it's going to be.
Okay, so Best Actor, Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper, Willem Dafoe, Rami Malek, Viggo Mortensen. You're going Rami Malek.
Definitely Rami Malek, without a doubt.
I think you're right.
Okay.
I think you're right, and I think you called this very early, and I'm still. But it's. I think you're right. Okay, Rami Malek. Okay,
I'm very pleased to see that get that.
Yeah, Best Supporting Actress: Amy Adams, Marina Zavira, Regina King, Emma Stone, Rachel Weisz. Clearly, Regina King.
King's got it.
Dead set.
Without a doubt.
And
deservedly
so.
As well, all the votes for Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz would knock the other one down, and then it's gonna.
Yeah. Okay, supporting actor, Mahershala Ali, Adam Driver, Sam Elliott, Richard E. Grant, Sam Rockwell, Mahershala Ali. Absolute dead cert.
Yeah.
Moving on, also remember, everybody, betting is a sin. Don't take our, if you bet, you lose money, it's your own fault, okay? Best original screenplay, The Favourite, First Reformed, Green Book, Roma, Vice. Ooh.
Best original screenplay, I think. Oh, is Black Klansman adapted screenplay?
Yes.
So it's going to... Right.
I think The Favourite in that case.
Yes. I think it's between The Favourite and Green Book. But then again, like with Paul Schrader, they might want to...
No.
Do you don't think so?
No.
You don't think he's got a chance?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Yeah. I think it's between The Favourite and Green Book then.
Okay. Best adapted screenplay, Star is Born, Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Black Klansman, If Beale Street Could Talk, and Can You Ever Forgive Me? And I think it will be Black Klansman.
Yes.
Well, I think it should be
If Beale Street Could Talk. It definitely should be.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. Original song, All the Stars, I'll Fight, The Place Where the Lost Things Go, Shallow, and Cowboy. When a Cowboy Trades His Spurs, which means that is going to be Shallow, right?
I would love it to be When a Cowboy Trades His Spurs for Wings. I would love that so much, but it's going to be Shallow.
But that isn't going to happen. Best Original Score, Black Panther, Black Klansman, If Beale Street Could Talk, Isle of Dogs, Mary Poppins, and I am going to hold out for Nicholas Britell for If Beale Street Could Talk.
I think it's got it. I think it really has when it comes to this. I think it's actually between If Beale Street Could Talk and Isle of Dogs.
Okay.
But I'm pretty certain Nicholas Patel has got that.
Okay. Documentary, Free Solo, Hail County, This Morning, This Evening, which is terrific. Mind the Gap, Fathers and Sons, and RPG.
I mean, going off the BAFTA, maybe it could go to that again for, yeah, to Free Solo.
I think that's impossible to call. Best animated feature, you are absolutely certain it's going to be Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
It has to be Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Like, okay. Out of all those ones, like, I don't even get why Incredibles 2. I mean, I get it's a brilliant animation, but Incredibles 2 I didn't think was...
Okay, I'm going to go with you because I think your instinct is right on that. And finally, we'll do this. Best foreign language film, Capernaum, Cold War, Never Look Away, Roma, and Shoplifters.
Roma.
So you think it's going to be Roma wins best film and Roma wins best foreign language film?
I think so,
and
yeah.
Bear in mind, if Roma wins best film, it would be the first time that a film shot entirely in a language other than English has won the Oscar, the Best Picture Oscar.
Yep.
Although there have been films before like Slumdog Millionaire and The Witch have won Best Picture, which have involved subtitle sequences, there has been no movie shot entirely in a foreign language that's ever won Best Picture, and that will be groundbreaking.
And I think that that is what is going to happen. And if it doesn't win Best Foreign Language Film, it definitely won Best Picture.
Yes, because you kind of feel everybody else. Yeah. Well, we don't want to give it that.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, Jack. So we will gather on the morning after the Oscars to see who got it right and who got it wrong.
And we'll see if anyone buys the other one a beer or something.
Yeah, you're right. Incidentally, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're 17.
No, but don't do that on the podcast. People have already got such a, like, I ran into somebody recently and they called me, "Oh, you're young Jack from the podcast."
Yeah.
I was like, "No, don't make that a thing."
No, it is a thing. I'm not going to stop making it a thing. It is a thing. Anyway,
27 today. 27 years young.
God, yeah. Don't look a day over 26. That's great. All right. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening to this Kermit on Film podcast. Jack Howard will be back with us in a couple of weeks' time. If you've enjoyed the podcast, do remember to subscribe. And if you want to get in touch, you can get in touch through Twitter. My Twitter handle is @KermodeMovie. Send me any comments or questions. And remember, if you enjoyed it, subscribe. Thanks. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.